This is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
So I'd just like to start by saying thank you to the organising committee for giving me this opportunity to speak with you today about a topic that I'm very passionate about, mentoring in medicine. I was also very relieved when I saw the theme for this conference this week of science and story. Because when it comes to mentoring, it's all about the stories. If I was to stand here today and try and talk to you about the science behind the benefits of mentoring, we'd all be up for a very early lunch break. Because mentoring has its roots in story. From the origin of the term mentor in ancient Greek literature, through to the many cultural references that we see about mentoring in our books and our films, some of which you'll see feature in my slides today. But also the many personal stories of mentoring and the impact that it has had on individuals' careers and their lives. And I can't stand here and share with you those personal stories today in an environment like this at a conference, because mentoring is an intensely personal experience. So I've employed the help of my friend here, Dr. Zeus, to help me along, and it wouldn't be a Don't Forget the Bubbles conference without at least some Dr. Zeus reference. So he's going to help me tell a story today about how mentoring can help you achieve success in your career. But I'd also like to take this opportunity to challenge some commonly held ideas about mentoring and what it is and isn't, and then to give you some ideas about new and different kinds of mentors that you can go and seek out in your future career. So I'm sure you're all very familiar with the most famous quote from the Dr. Zeus book, Oh, the Places You'll Go. You have brains in your head and feet in your shoes, and you can steer yourself in any direction you choose. And it's not such a stretch to compare the journey of the main character in this book to that of our journeys through our career in medicine or nursing or any of the healthcare professions. We start our careers after medical school, all bright-eyed and enthusiastic, and confident that we'll succeed, like most doctors before us have done. But perhaps we do lack a little bit of insight into exactly what it takes to make a great doctor, and what some of the challenges will be along that journey from novice to expert. And we don't find out the name of the main character in this book, but for the purposes of this talk, I've decided his name is Zeus. So Zeus starts out his career after medical school with his brains in his head and his feet in his shoes, and he's told he can choose any direction he likes in medicine. So he takes some time thinking about which training path he might take. Will he join his fun and light-hearted colleagues in paediatrics? Or will he go to the dark side and train in surgery? Or will he live life on the edge and do emergency medicine? So he makes his choice and off he goes on his journey. And like any good journey, he takes a few wrong turns at the start and he hits a few bumps along the way. But eventually he finds some momentum and finds that he's really enjoying his career. And then after a few years and without any formal training, he's offered a leadership position. And he starts to really grow in confidence at this point and finds himself pulling a long way ahead of the rest of the pack. And then something happens. He comes up against a major obstacle and gets stuck and suffers a major setback in his career. And he's not quite sure how he got there or how he's going to get himself out. And he finds himself in a dark and horrible place called the slump. And he spends quite some time there because, as you know, unslumping yourself is not easily done. But he does eventually find his way to the next place, a place where not very much happens called the waiting place. And he spends even more time there trying to work out what the right steps are to get his career back on track. And eventually, at the end of the book, and sorry to ruin it for those of you in the room who haven't read it, but he achieves success. And according to Dr. Zeus, this is 98.75% guaranteed. But I'm not sure the statistics for a career in medicine are quite that generous. So it was a pretty bumpy ride for Zeus, and I guess reading this book now with a bit more of my own life experience and at the midpoint of my own medical career, I couldn't help but wonder if his journey would have looked quite different if he'd have had a mentor right from the start. So many of the most successful people in our society credit their success to great mentoring. Folks like Barack Obama, Richard Branson, Mark Zuckerberg, all publicly state that their mentors had a crucial role in their career success. And mentoring has been embraced as an essential part of one's career development in the business world, in politics, and for high-performance athletes. But in comparison, the medical profession has been quite slow to adopt this concept of mentoring. And it still surprises me how few doctors actually have mentors. So traditional models of mentoring describe a more experienced person, the mentor, guiding the less experienced person, the mentee, along their path to personal and professional development. And I think this is one of the main reasons why the medical profession has been slow to adopt this concept, is because it is seen as being very similar to the traditional apprenticeship model of medical training, where the older, learned doctor shares their years of knowledge and experience with the next generation. And often these older senior doctors are referred to as mentors by the junior doctors who work alongside them. And this brings me to the first idea about mentoring that I'd like to challenge, and that's that mentoring is not the same as supervision. So the mentor role and the supervisor role are complementary, but they're actually quite different roles. And in order for each role to reach its full potential, ideally they should be kept completely separate. And I'll explain why. So a supervisor is often assigned to a trainee by the workplace or a training organisation, and there may be very little choice on the part of the trainee about who their supervisor might be. And as we've heard from Laurie's talk earlier, the supervisor has an important role in the assessment and feedback to the trainee. And naturally, in medicine, in the hierarchy of medicine, that supervisor does hold a position of authority over a junior doctor. They have the power to decide whether they pass or fail a term, or whether they progress on their chosen career. But the mentor role is different. So the mentor is usually chosen by the trainee. And as such, they can choose someone that they feel comfortable talking to or has characteristics and skills that they value. And this often means that the mentor-mentee relationship may be a better fit. And mentoring is not driven by the needs of the workplace, but by the needs of the individual mentee. And they have the power to set the curriculum, to decide what they want to discuss and what they want to learn. And mentoring done well is a vulnerable relationship. So time must be spent establishing a relationship of trust. And only once that trust exists can the real work of mentoring occur. And this means that mentoring is actually a slow and deliberate process and often takes a lot of time to achieve its outcomes, often a lot longer than our normal 3 or 6 month workplace rotations will allow. And what is discussed in a mentoring relationship should remain confidential and not be shared with anyone without the express permission of the mentee. And this means that topics are able to be raised that would normally not be raised with the trainee with their supervisor, because they actually might be scared that exposing their vulnerabilities and sharing their weaknesses might actually have some impact on their term assessments or their career progression. And the mentor role can be a very varied role. So it can be everything from advice about career progression to role modelling. There can be a role for support and debriefing after clinical events. And there can even be a role, fitting in with what Eric talked about earlier, about helping trainees to manage their well-being and their work-life balance. And there may be a role for the mentor to be a coach for specific skills, if that's within their skill set, or to help with goal setting, or even act as a sponsor to help their trainee get ahead on their chosen career path. And like anything in medicine, it's, of course, not going to be that simple. And often the mentor role and supervisor role do overlap, because good supervisors provide a lot of these aspects of the mentoring role. And mentors will, of course, be required to supervise their mentees from time to time in the workplace. And this can be challenging in small departments where there's only a limited number of senior staff to actually be able to separate out those two roles. But I think even having some awareness of the conflict that exists between the two roles and that power differential that does exist within a supervisor relationship can be helpful if you're not able to physically separate these two roles. This brings me to the second idea about mentoring that I'd like to challenge, and that is that mentoring is not just a casual chat over a cup of coffee. So mentoring is a series of deliberate and structured conversations that occur over time with a mutual commitment on the part of the mentor and the mentee to work together towards a common goal. And we do see lots of informal mentoring relationships that occur in the workplace, in hospital corridors and tea rooms. And while these can be very helpful chats, they don't tend to have an impact on the long-term development of a mentee. And compare that to more formal mentoring relationships that occur through mentoring programs where matching occurs, or through a mentee deliberately going out and seeking a formal mentor. And these relationships tend to have more structure and be more goal-focused. And they tend to progress through stages as the mentee develops over time. And formal mentoring is more likely to occur at protected times, away from the clinical areas of the workplace. And this provides a much safer forum for the more challenging conversations of mentoring to occur. Now, of course, there can be coffee, and tea, and even cake, if you like. And for most of my mentoring conversations, there usually is. But I think it is really important to remember that it's not the quality of the coffee that's important, but the quality of the conversations that occur. And the third idea that I would like to challenge around mentoring is that mentoring is not about being given advice. So the role of the mentor is not to share war stories or give advice or solve all of the mentee's problems. Good mentors listen more than they talk, and they ask more questions than they answer. And good mentors recognise that what worked for them in their career may not work for the mentee. And so they share vulnerability and ideas rather than war stories. And mentoring occurs more at this empowering end of the spectrum of coaching than the traditional doctor role. So as doctors, we're very used to being the experts and the leaders and having all of the answers. And we spend a lot of our day solving problems for our patients and our colleagues. But the mentor role is more a facilitator role. So it's our job to encourage reflection, to ask questions and listen, and to empower the mentee to come up with their own solutions to their problems after exploring all of the options with their mentor. And this means that sometimes the best doctors don't actually make the best mentors. So coming back to our friend Zeus and thinking about his journey. So perhaps if Zeus had had a mentor from the start, he could have gotten some early career advice and made a more informed choice about the right path to take through his training. And he could have developed some awareness of the likely challenges he would face on that journey from novice to expert and be more prepared for the bumps that he encountered along the road. And he could have developed some early, he could have gotten some teamwork, communication and leadership skills early in his training, so that when he found himself way out there at the head of the pack, he could have been a more successful leader. And perhaps with the help of his mentor, he could have seen that obstacle off in the distance and been able to navigate around it. But even if not, and he found himself stuck in the tree, he would have had access to a support person with an already established relationship of trust who could have helped get him out of the tree and get his career back on track. And maybe he could have avoided spending all that time feeling alone in the slump. So for those of you out there who don't currently have a mentor, I would like to encourage you to go out and find one. Whether you're at the beginning of your career, in the middle, or even approaching the end, there is always something more that we can learn and ways that we can improve. And for those of you out there who already have a mentor, I also have good news. So for mentoring relationships, unlike marital ones, it is okay to have more than one at the same time. It's very unlikely that one mentor will be able to provide for you through all the different stages of your career and all the different challenges that you will face. And so I give you permission to go out and seek more than one mentor as you progress through your career. And with that in mind, I'd like to finish off by sharing with you the five types of mentors that you need to have in your career. So the first is the inspirational mentor. So this is the person that you look up to and aspire to be like, who's likely ahead of you on your chosen career path or successful in a related area. And the benefits of this type of mentor are in the role modelling that they can provide. But also because they've been successful themselves, they're very well placed to help you find the right path to success. And they can be there to guide you and support you and even provide sponsorship to help you get ahead on that chosen path. And these types of inspirational mentors are everywhere and they're not limited to your field of practice. But in order to see the benefits of this type of mentoring relationship, you have to be brave enough to strike up an actual conversation with this person. So you need to have the courage to go up to them, introduce yourself, and ask them to invest their precious time in you and your career. The second type of mentor is the challenging mentor. So this is a person who will help move you outside your comfort zone. So in order to improve, we need to be challenged, not just in our ideas, but in our perception of our own abilities. And this is the kind of mentor that will have the honest conversations with you and tell you some things that you might not want to hear. And they'll help you and encourage you to take the more challenging path to success. And they'll come along with you for the ride. And these types of challenging mentors are everywhere, and they're not difficult to find. But it's the time spent establishing that relationship of trust that will allow the benefits of this type of mentor to occur. And the third type of mentor is the peer mentor. So this is a person that you respect and work alongside and who is travelling a similar career path to you. And it might be someone that is a friend in the workplace or that you bonded with during your training. And the benefits of this type of mentor are in the availability of an ear when you need it and a shared understanding of the challenges you're facing in your career, and because they're likely to be experiencing very similar challenges. And this is the person who will have the conversations about the difficult cases and the difficult colleagues. And if you don't have this type of person in your career, then I think you need to go out and find them, because they can actually be very protective against some of our biggest workplace stressors that Eric highlighted earlier, like isolation in the workplace, burnout, and compassion fatigue. The fourth type of mentor is the diverse mentor. So this is the person who will open your eyes and help you see the world in different ways. It may be someone from a different cultural background, a different gender, or even a different practice location to yourself. Or it may be someone from a career outside of medicine or a different specialty area. Diversity helps us see the world in different ways, and it's really important as a doctor to be able to take on the perspectives of others, not just for our relationships with our patients, but to be able to work with our colleagues. We have wonderfully diverse people in medicine in this country, and I would encourage you all to go out and seek diversity in your mentoring relationships, not just as a way to foster your own personal growth, but to assist in fostering the growth of others. And the last type of mentor is the reverse mentor. So this is a person who's younger than you in years and is coming up behind you in the ranks, but who has skills that you wish you had. So this might be skills in technology or ultrasound, or for me, in navigating social media. And this type of mentoring relationship can be really rewarding, and we're increasingly seeing managers and CEOs seeking out reverse mentoring as a way to stay in touch with the younger generation in the workplace and to understand how they communicate and how they prefer to work. So I think as seniors, it's a sign of arrogance to think that we don't have anything that we can learn from our juniors. And so for those of you in the audience with a few grey hairs, I would encourage you to go and seek out this type of mentoring as you progress further through your career. So I have been wonderfully fortunate to have had great mentoring through my career. And I'm only standing here before you today as an emergency physician and an educator because of the role that each of my mentors has played in shaping my career. 2 years ago, one of my long-term mentors, who's hiding in the audience here somewhere, challenged me to stand up at this conference and give a talk about mentoring. And it took me quite a long time to build up the courage to do that. But here I am. So thanks, Vic. So I'd like you all to reflect now on the role that mentoring can have in your career. If you don't have a mentor, I'd encourage you to go and find one. And if you do have a mentor, to reflect on whether it's meeting the needs. Do you both make enough time for mentoring? And do the conversations that you have continue to contribute to your ongoing development? And if not, is it time to go and seek out a new mentor from a different culture, gender, or age group? The wonderful thing about a career in medicine is that we never stop learning, and we should never stop trying to improve ourselves to be the best doctors that we can be for our patients. And I think mentoring is well placed to have a role in helping us achieve that goal. Thank you.
Stand up.
Thanks very much, Mel. And I want to reflect on one thing that Mel really didn't highlight there. those of us who have benefited most from mentors, please go and thank them. Mm. Okay? There is nothing more powerful than someone you have helped saying thank you. Mm. So whether you're 6 years old or 60 years old, write them an email, write them a letter, pick up the phone, say thank you, you've made a difference to me. Mm. So with that lovely, soft and fluffy note, Beck, any questions?
This is one from Ben Simmons. He said, I've had trouble with mentoring when I feel drawn into being a counsellor instead. How do we negotiate that?
That's a great question. Thanks, Ben. I think one of the important things when you start out as a mentor is to be very clear in your own head about what the boundaries are of what you're willing to provide in a mentor role. And I think if you have that conversation with yourself early and you decide where your skill set lies, and it's going to be different for every one of us, what we're prepared to discuss within that mentoring relationship. And I think if you keep those boundaries firmly in your head, it becomes more obvious when the conversations are starting to deviate beyond the area that you feel uncomfortable with. And I think that's what I use as a way. If I'm starting to feel uncomfortable, then perhaps I should be starting to reflect on where my boundaries are around mentoring, but also think about referring that person on to get more specialised help.
Yeah, this is feedback of appreciation. Fantastic talk. Thank you very much. My question's actually about a group you didn't sort of mention, although I think you made allusion to, and that is the peer mentor. Mm. I was so influenced by Henry's blog, I don't know, a year or so ago, that I ran out and found a colleague who I thought was probably not too much of a friend, but very respected, and thought, let's go through some clinical cases. And it was really good for a while, but then it sort of petered out. Have you got any advice for how we can get that nice kind of peer mentoring? And it actually relates to feedback as well on how we get to know whether we're still doing a good job in our clinical worlds.
And I think the good thing about a peer mentor is that becomes a very safe space. And I think feeding off what Laurie said earlier is about feedback needs to be bi-directional and it needs to be sought out. And so I think if you have those people in the workplace that you probably all have if you think about it, but maybe formally naming it as a mentoring relationship and actually giving each other regular opportunities to provide feedback to each other, and whether you do that formally through having meetings where you meet for coffee or whether you do that informally, I think that has a role. So.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm quite a junior doctor and I know there are a couple others in the audience. It can be quite intimidating to go up to someone who's very much senior than you and ask them basically to be your mentor. Mm-hmm. So first of all, what advice would you give us, and also advice, I guess, more senior doctors about kind of making themselves open mm-hmm. to juniors coming up to them and being like, hi, can I ask you some questions?
Kind of, yeah, it can be a bit intimidating, and I think we recognise that. I think there's two aspects to that. Firstly, I think to encourage all the junior doctors in the room that it's actually quite flattering to, as a senior doctor, to be asked to be somebody's mentor, and I think we think that reflects that we have some value to add to that junior doctor. So I think, you know, to encourage you not to be frightened to go up and ask somebody that you respect to be your mentor. But secondly, this is where the role of formal mentoring programs, I think, really come into play, and it breaks down that hierarchy, that it becomes an expectation, particularly, you know, in my department, we have a very formal structure to our mentoring program, and so it's almost expected that you will put your hand up and ask for a mentor, and it's almost expected that most of the consultant group and senior registrars will act in that role if they're comfortable doing that. And so I think it becomes normal to match people up and to start those conversations, and they don't always work in terms of the match. It's, you know, a bit like any of those websites where you match people together. You don't always get the matching right, but I think it at least gives people permission to seek out a mentor in a much less, you know, confronting way.
So. Is there any level that it's most valuable at, like when you're an intern or a resident or a registrar or even, I guess, a consultant?
Look, I think that was one of the messages I was hoping to get across in my talk, is it doesn't matter what stage of your career you are at, that you can still benefit from having a mentor. And there's a lot of discussions within the College for Emergency Medicine. I see Simon sitting in the audience today about mentoring for directors of emergency departments. You know, we see those as our leaders, but actually they're reaching out and saying that they want some mentoring too. So I think the earlier you start, the more likely it is to have significant effects on your career, but it doesn't mean that you can't have one if you're at the end of your career.
Thank you for a fabulous talk, everybody. I'm just wondering if you can comment on, particularly I think it applies in smaller areas, trying to manage the role of supervisor and mentor. I find that challenging.
It's really challenging, yeah. And I think I don't think we always get this right either. And I think we have to recognise that unlike the business world where it's very easy to separate out those two roles, in medicine it's actually a lot more challenging to do that. And sometimes we're forced to wear both hats. But I think being explicit what sort of conversation you're having with the trainee can really help. So for a while I was mentoring some trainees and I was a director of training for other trainees. And I made it very clear that we're having a mentoring conversation or we're having a end of term, you know, supervisor, trainee type conversation, and making that clear can be really helpful.
Thanks, Lexi Frydenberg from the Royal Children's in Melbourne. Just to follow on from Victoria's comment, we've set up a formalised peer-to-peer mentor program and there's a lot of resources that you can access. Mm. And I think that's been really helpful for people to learn what a good peer-to-peer relationship is, and it's not just going out for dinner and having wine. Although that's great too. Yeah. So three brilliant talks. The other thing is that I've got a passion for mentoring and coaching as well, because what I found with senior doctors is it's very hard to find, you know, mentors or fulfil all those five roles. Mm. And one of my gripes is that as mentors, we're not trained to be mentors and we don't have a lot of experience, whereas, say, coaches, executive coaches or coaches in healthcare are usually from a psychology HR background, so they've got a lot of skills about listening and guiding. I know ASEM does it a lot better than paediatrics and we're working on that, but have you got any advice on how we can train the mentors better?
Mm, it's challenging. It's one of those skills that you pop up as a consultant, you're told, now here, you can be a mentor. And you're right, we have no formal training in this. There is very little out there in the way of training, of mentor training within medicine. So the ASEM modules, which are not publicly accessible at the moment, but there are some similar modules on the RACS surgeons website that you can access to do some, I guess, online mentor training, whether that's helpful or not. And there's increasingly some mentor training workshops popping up in individual hospitals or even through college conferences and workshops at conferences. So I guess that's the context-specific mentoring for medicine that's a little bit lacking at the moment. There are lots of business-type coaching and managing mentoring courses that you can go and do, and again, they are helpful to set some of the ideas about what mentoring is and to develop some of the skills of mentoring, but they may lack that context of what's specific to medicine. But I agree, I think it's where we go forward. Now that the awareness is out there of the benefits of mentoring and that people are starting to seek it out, then the next thing we need to look at and prioritise is mentor training. And I think that should start for registrars so that when they become consultants, they're ready to hit the ground running.
That's a session for next year, yes. The FTB 19 mentoring session, yeah.
So my question kind of applies to all three of you, I think. I think a lot of junior doctors, it's a common story I've heard, it's happened to me where you've gotten some feedback. It's been negative feedback, but very poorly delivered, as I think someone else was alluding to as well. And that can get you quickly into a cycle of poor mental health and poor performance. You end up turning to mentors. And what's the best way to navigate that as a junior doctor? Should you be feeding that back to the department saying, you know, this was a really terrible experience? How do you do that and how do you navigate that in a way that is constructive rather than continuing that cycle?
Does anyone want to? Are you going to throw that to me, Eric?
Yes, that's you. Thank
you. Look, I think Laurie made that point very clearly that feedback needs to be bi-directional. And I think if we work in a department where it's not, then as the senior doctors in the department, we need to be asking why we're not encouraging feedback to come up the hierarchy, as well as being very willing to give it down the hierarchy. And I think that comes with cultural change around feedback and in training the people that are giving feedback in how to give effective feedback, as you quite nicely highlighted in your presentation. And I think mentoring is just one aspect of the support network that we need to survive and thrive in medicine. And so I think it's certainly where my passion lies, but I think there's many, many other ways that we can encourage trainees to seek out support. And other methods for them to, I guess, to give feedback into the system about what they want to get out of the culture of their workplace. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to
add? Yeah, I think we keep coming back to this thing called culture, providing a safe and positive working culture. And again, this is why we've got conferences like this, where we are actually talking about this issue as the kind of the X factor that really determines, you know, you could be in doing the same specialty in two different hospitals and you get a slightly different feel and you feel much safer to provide a feedback back to the more seniors in one hospital compared to another. And I think a lot of it comes with time and leadership and providing that kind of both formal and informal culture around that.
As a junior trainee who's received corrective feedback that's at times made me feel, you know, feel negatively, I think something I found really, really helpful was going to someone who I trusted, a trusted person whether that's a mentor, whether that's a coach, whether that's a supervisor, after the fact, and just having a conversation about what happened, breaking it down, being self-reflective and teaching that receiving feedback is also a skill, and that you need to be self-reflective. What components may be true or what needs more clarification is also really helpful.
And last question from Ben.
Thanks so much for that talk again. I was just wondering if, in your preparation for that talk, Merle, if you came up with any good resources for how to be a better mentee.
There's not a lot out there. It's really interesting. Like when in my department, I've been running a mentoring program for the last 6 years, and we do mentor training and mentee training. And so we have a similar but slightly different conversation on how to get the best out of mentoring for the people that are signing up for the program. And we've recently started a hospital-wide mentoring program, which has been initiated by the junior doctors in our hospital who are desperately seeking out mentoring, particularly in the smaller specialties where they don't have big, robust programs. And part of that becomes setting the ground rules of what mentoring is and isn't, what to expect, and how to get the most out of your mentoring relationship. But also a safety netting process in that to say, when does this stop being mentoring and start to become something that needs more professional help? And I think there's not a lot of resources out there, Ben, so if anyone has any ideas of where they might be, that'd be great.
Our Children's Hospital, Claire Polling, who's a medical education officer, has put a lot of work into this, and so you can get access to Learning Hero, which is our information, and she's got information on how to be a mentor, how to be a mentee, how to set up a program, and GP mentoring.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lexi. So I'd like you all to put your hands together and thank our lovely speakers this morning. Well done.